starting.
Looks like everybody's getting busy with the sign.
If you still have questions about the assignment for this module, the demonstrator, Martin Kennedy, will be in the master's lab from 12 o'clock to 1:30 today. So since I'm taking some of the lecture time and letting you talk to the demonstrator instead. Okay. As a consequence of that, we'll have one lecture segment. And we'll see how long it runs. Okay. So, in the past few weeks, you've covered a number of topics, one of which was GSM as an example of a 2G network. Okay. Now, for the following two slots, we're going to sort of see how that is evolving on to 3G and 4G technologies. And we will view it sort of as an evolution, although you could potentially argue that things have changed pretty much completely between 2G and 4G. But still, a lot of the basic ideas are similar. And so we'll talk about sort of again how things have evolved, what technologies have changed, what ideas have stayed the same. Okay. Today, we'll look at an evolution again from the GSM world into a 3G world and the big philosophical shift has been 2G was geared towards providing digital voice communication. Okay, so basically in us, you provided as a voice communication in a circuit switch fashion, and again, we went through all the details about how that happened, and specifically we looked at the basic architectures and the basic components of a GSM system, from the base transmission system to the MSC and how they interacted with each other. And then we looked at a lot of channels as the sort of unit over which data could be transmitted, and we saw that we had logical channels which sort of indicated the type of data that was being transmitted, and then these got mapped onto physical channels. Okay. So what we're going to do today is look at the evolution to 3G systems, and the goal of 3G systems is to have packet-switched data on pretty much an equal footing with the voice data, okay? And also to provide then for higher data rates. And what we'll see is that this can be more or less accomplished by tweaking our GSM system, or when we get into UMTS, we're talking about completely changing the air interface. Okay. So who says what exactly 3G means? And the answer to that is the ITU, International Telecommunications Union, is responsible for standardization of 3G and subsequently 4G systems. Okay. Now, there's a essentially reduce
the specification. You have to meet certain performance requirements and provide certain functionality. There's a number of ways of doing this. And so IMTS 2000, International Mobile Telecommunications 2000, represents the family of standards for 3G mobile telecommunications, which has been approved by the ITU. So anybody can submit, anybody can submit a standard to the ITU, and they will say whether it conforms to the 3G requirements or not. Okay, and the basic, again, requirements are simultaneous use of speech and data services, higher data rates with up to 14 megabits per second downlink and 5.8 megabits per second uplinks. Exact rates aren't specified. Support for global mobility, so sort of more interoperability, and support for multimedia and real-time services. So now the data is coming to the fore, and again, the new types of data, streaming media, etc., we're introducing quality of service parameters. Okay. Okay, so as I said, anybody can propose a standard and have it checked for conformance by the ITU. In the European context, we have the 3GPP, Third Generation Partnership Project, which is a collaborative partnership to develop 3G system specifications. And the standards produced by the 3GPP are the UMTS standards. Okay, now, again, this is not the only set of standards. 3GPP2 in the North American context has developed the competing CDMA 2000 standard. Okay. We're going to concentrate on the evolution of GSM to UMTS. And so we're not really going to look at other competing standards. Now, one thing to note is that sort of, the work of 3GPP and 3GPP2 is converging again with the adoption of the LTE and LTE advanced standards for 4G. Okay, so what are we going to see today? Again, we're going to look at a number of advances from basic GSM up to UMTS. HSCD essentially just introduces some sort of basic packet handling into GSM. Mainly by making a circuit switch, so it's been making a sort of a circuit available to transport packets. So again, with all the certain performance drawbacks that that sort of a approach would have. We then move on to GPRS, which introduces dedicated packet handling, so packets are handled as an entity in themselves, not just data to be handled over a circuit. Edge, which improves the performance of GPRS using different transmission technologies, although in the same bandwidth, and then UMTS, which introduces a new air interface working in a different portion of the radio spectrum. Okay. And we wrap up just saying that there is a life beyond 3G, and we'll deal with that next Thursday. Okay. So there are a number of references. In radioelectronics.com has a number of nice tutorials taking you through the various technologies, and sort of WCDL is sort of a dominant version of the UMTS standard, which gives a fair amount of detail, but again can provide some insight into sort of how all these things are put together. Okay. So again, we've started with GSM, and again, what GSM did was provide you digital voice connections in pretty much a circuit switch fashion. So you were allocated resources to a voice session. So HSCSD, high-speed circuit switch data services, is one of the first attempts to acknowledge and deal with data as an entity separate from voice communications. But it's dealt with data still within this pretty circuit switched world by assigning time slots for data transmission. Okay. Now, what it did allow was for multiple time slots to be allocated for one data communications, and of course, what that's doing is it's increasing your data rate and minimizing your connection time. And so you can have up to 8 time slots dedicated to one data transmission, and all of the channels will follow will be regarded essentially as a single unit. Okay. And in particular, during handover, you must hand over all of the channels together. So the benefits of this, again, are a higher data rate, but the drawback is that you're going to have a much higher blocking probability as well, since you now have to not find a single channel if you're doing a handover, but you have to find the multiple slots available at the same time. Okay. So how does this work? During connection setup, your mobile station is going to indicate the number of channels that it wants and a certain minimum required number of channels. Okay. And also negotiated will be the channel coding, and so it can be with error correction or with no error correction, the modem type. And what data rate they want. Okay. So essentially that's negotiating the parameters of the connection, seeing how much resources the mobile station will be allocated, and so then the system has to go and see if it has the resources. And the connection can be symmetric, so you can have the same number of time slots in uplink and downlink, or asymmetric. Frequently it's assumed that what the user is doing is downloading data, so they'll need more downlink connections than uplink. Okay. And the price is going to be dependent on the duration of the connection and the number of time slots used during the connection. Okay. So that works, but it's still connection oriented and can be pricey for that reason. So there was a realization that packets really needed to be sort of handled sort of as separate entities from voice communication with separate requirements. Okay. So GPRS, General Packet Radio Service, provides packet radio access for GSM. So now, instead of assigning data, essentially a voice link to be transported over, the packet will be treated as its own entity and handled on a packet-by-packet basis. Okay, so the goal here is to preserve as much of the infrastructure as possible and integrate telephony and data services. And again, it's done as a small modification of GSM. And since packets are handled, again, on sort of as their own entities, we don't require connections to transmit packet data. Now the user can be charged according not to the connection requirements, but the amount of data or the amount of packets sent. And so, again, that's designed to support bursty traffic. It's designed to sort of treat packet transmission on a level footing with voice transmission in a way that's sympathetic to it. Okay. So the way this is handled is to add essentially packet handling entities side by side with your voice handling entities. Okay. So what's introduced is the GSN, which is the GPRS support node, and this delivers data packets and determines how to route them through the GPRS system. And there are two main flavors of GSN, the serving GSN, which delivers and receives packets from and to a mobile station within its service area, and so that's similar to the MSC, and it provides all the sort of functionality you need for that: user authentication and user identity. And then the gateway GSN, which is an interface between the mobile system and external now packet data networks. Okay. So, in order to accomplish this, again, we don't really have to modify the GSM network a lot. We just add on a few bits. We add on our GSMs, and we upgrade our software at the BSC so that it recognizes packets as well as voice transmission. Okay. So again, the big changes are the new GSMs. Okay. And what we have now is we can accommodate both GSM users and GPRS users together. Okay, so just graphically, you've already seen your GSM architecture, so you have your BSCs, hosted to the MSCs, which forward the data to the GMSCs and out to the core network. Now, at the base station, we have to distinguish between voice traffic and packet traffic, and so we add a packet control unit to handle the packet data, and that is routed to the SGSN, and then on to the GSN, and out to now the data network. Okay. Now, packets are still transmitted along sort of a specific channel, so a specific frequency. And packet transmission now has to be shared among the various entities by some form of statistical multiplexing. And in the downlink direction, it's straightforward enough, so the packets can be stored in the SGN. Queued and then transmitted on a first-come, first-served basis. In the uplink direction, well, again, you have the issue of how to allocate the resources so the packets can be transmitted. And this is accomplished via reservation aloha. And so slotted aloha is used for the mobile stations to make a request for resources. Okay, so this is a contention-based protocol, so they all attempt to send in their requests, and potentially the requests may or may not get there. If they don't get there, they... Questions? They try again. And so when the requests have been received, then the SGSN will make an allocation using dynamic TDMA. And so what this does is it allocates a varying number of time slots to the transmission on a first-come, first-served basis. So you might contrast that with, for instance, Wi-Fi, where everything is contention-based. Here, again, there has to be some contention, or there is some contention in the reservation requests, but the actual then allocation of resources is done in a controlled fashion. Okay. So channels for GPRS are quite similar to GSM. The changes, of course, have to do with packet handling. So we add packet control channels as opposed, in addition to the voice control channels. Okay. And again, for voice, you never need more than one time slot. Now we'll allow the allocation of multiple time slots to a single mobile station. Okay, the resources are allocated only for the duration of the packet transmission. And so the channels can be assigned based on load priority and the type of operations, so is it control versus data. And as with GSM, we separate that out into logical channels, and which define sort of the purpose of the data, and then these are then mapped onto the physical channels. Okay. So the logical to physical packet channel mapping is similar to GSM. The overall hierarchy is set up a little bit differently in the sense that four frames create a block, and then 52 blocks constitute a multi-frame. So slightly different than for GSM, and again, sort of coexisting with all the GSM channels as well, so things are getting, but the channel structure is getting even more complicated. Okay. So within that, we have four types of logical channels. We have packet data traffic channels, which again carry user data, and you can assign up to 8 to any one user. Packet common control channels, which again are used to set up the transmission of data. And so we have channels like packet random access channel, which allows the mobile station to request the resources, access grant channel, so indicates the allocation to the mobile station, paging channels, and notification channels, which are used in multicast transmission. So again, that's setting up or signaling the need for resources. Okay. Then you have your broadcast control channels, which again sort of are used downlink to send information about how the cell is operating, and dedicated control channels, which are used to manage individual connections. So, as an example, if you want to connect to the network, the mobile station looks on the broadcast, look for the packet broadcast control channel, and the packet common control channel, And if it can't find that, the indications of the GPRS is not supported, and so we'll drop back and look for the GSM channels. Okay, so again, sort of in connection with sort of the evolution of data networks, GPRS acknowledges that different types of data exist and allows for traffic to be classified according to their quality of service requirements, and then there will be some attempt to allocate resources based on these requirements. One drawback that exists within GPRS is that voice connections still take precedence. So if you have enough voice traffic, then your data traffic is not going to get anything, whatever it needs. Okay, so how does GPRS distinguish between types of traffic? Whether you're allowed to assign priority, you're allowed to request delay parameters, and that's according to conversation and also the voice over IP streaming, so multimedia streaming, interactive services, and then backgrounds. And again, if you look at the IPU G1010 standard, you'll see the description of all of those. Okay. You can also request different levels of reliability and levels of throughput. Okay. So, in addition to just sort of basic resource allocation, GPRS has a number of coding schemes, and those coding schemes are going to trade off between reliability and data rates, and can be changed depending on what the channel conditions are and your service requirements. So there's four coding schemes used. CS1 has the strongest redundancy and can be used in poor channel conditions, and its basic data rate is 9.05 kilobits per second. CS4 has the weakest coding scheme, but if the conditions are very good, that's fine. And it gives you a much higher data rate of 21.4 channels per second. So we can see, again, the four coding schemes, such as these CS3, obviously, not CS2 again. And each of these, again, you go from strongest to weakest, and each of them gives you a certain data rate. And then if you combine that with a maximum of 8 slots, you can see the data rates that are available using GPRS, moving from 72.4 as a maximum in sort of in poor channel conditions up to 171.2
in good channel conditions. Okay. So again, quality of service is dependent on the number of slots allocated and the coding scheme used. And so different combinations of that are going to give you different data rates, different levels of reliability. Ultimately, of course, your reliability is dependent on your channel conditions. Typical service negotiations would be based on a minimum and maximum performance. The drawback of that is that typically the minimum is not really that hot, and the maximum is going to be dependent on whether the resources are available. Again, voice transmissions will take precedence, so they'll hog the slots essentially. Okay. So what's interesting about GPRS? Well, it's the first attempt to offer a genuine packet-switched service. And it was done, again, as an overlay of GSM. So evolving from your basic digital voice network. It's still quite voice-oriented. It would still be the primary goal as delivering voice traffic. Okay. And as you've seen, you get some data rates, but they're not spectacular. Okay. So Edge is again another evolutionary step that's moving up to 3G requirements over existing GSM or 3G specifications over existing GSM networks. Typically, it's not. It can edge up part of the time to 3G levels of service, but typically people don't regard it as a 3G service because it's still working, operating in this GSM spectrum as opposed to what people typically think of as, you know, 3G in the new 3G spectrum with the new air interfaces. Okay. So Edge triples the gross data rates offered by GSM. And the first, it does this by using more sophisticated coding methods within the GSM time slots and more sophisticated modulation within the time slots. So again, it's worth being aware that the schemes used in terms of coding and modulation are going to be dependent on the quality of the radio channel. So again, you try to do the best you can, but you acknowledge that the radio channel is not always the same, of the same quality. The most obvious example is as you're traveling away from a base station, your signal-to-noise ratio is increasing, etc. As you travel, you may change the rates at which the transmission occurs by changing the modulation and coding schemes. Okay. So the theoretical maximum for Edge is 473 kilobits per second, half a megabit per second.
So what improvements are there that allow for these higher data rates? Signaling is accomplished via 8 PSK, which means that you have 3 bits per signaling element. And again, that's in the ideal conditions, assuming that you can support that. If either your conditions are not as good or you don't need that sort of data rate, you use GMSK. Frequency hopping, so spread spectrum, is used to reduce the effect of channel fading, so again to improve the conditions of the channel, or to decrease the impact of the channel conditions on your signal, and lead to a lower co-channel interference level, which can increase system capacity. Okay, and so every block is sent on 4 different frequencies. And again, modulation and channel coding are chosen to suit the link quality available. The modification to GPRS is in the transmission equipment, then it needs to be able to sort of use the modulation and produce the modulation encoding schemes being used. Okay. So again, the modulation encoding is fitted to the link quality, and the link quality is determined by the MS who informs the base station, and again, there's a combination of 2 modulation schemes, so your 8 PSK and your GMSK, and 9 different coding rates. Again, each coding rate goes from stronger to weaker, with the stronger ones allowing a lesser data rate. Okay, so it's more of the bits have to be dedicated to the coding, less to the data. Okay. And as with GPRS, each of those is going to result in different throughputs. But again, it's relatively small modifications to the GPRS system. Okay, so overall it improves on the performance of GPRS with higher peak data rates. Okay, and that's if you use 8 channels, you get around 4 megabits per second. And it's still using the 2G spectrum, and it's essentially considered a flavor of GSM. Okay. So, again, in terms of data rates, you could argue that Edge is a 3G system, but usually it's not regarded in that way. Usually 3G is reserved for systems operating in the new 3G spectrum that is allocated for that purpose. So, again, the ITU developed the IMTS 2000 The ITU developed the 3G specifications, so 3G standards, and will determine which particular standards conform to the 3G specifications. Okay. The goals of 3G are, again, simultaneous use of speech and data, higher data rates, not saying exactly what, more interoperability, and the support of various data applications. Okay. The UMTS standards were developed by 3GPP to conform to the 3G specification, and again, they are one of a number of competing standards that do. They would be the primary European standard. Even within UMTS, there's a number of different flavors available. Okay, so 3G specifications, standards, has been handled as a series of releases, and again, this trend moves on to 4G systems as well. And so release 98 specified pre-3G networks, essentially things like Edge, things like GPRS, Edge. Okay. Release 99 specified the first UMTS networks, and again, one of the key features of these UMTS networks was a new air interface, and all of the UMTS interfaces are based on CDMA, so code division multiple access. Release 4 specified an all IP core. Release 5 introduced an IP multimedia subsystem and high speed downlink packet access. We keep on going, essentially. Release 7 improved the quality of service. And so, release 7 was the last sort of UMTS specific release. Okay. Now, again, things move on. And so from there, 3GPP has moved into sort of looking at 4G standards, and their evolution to 4G started with LTE, and sort of has been sort of culminated in LTE Advanced. And again, as a note, as I said, 3GPP2 is developing a competing set of standards, but they converge and they've adopted the LTE standard and the LTE Advanced standard. Okay. So, I guess the main thing to come out of here is that that the networks are constantly changing and constantly evolving. 3GPP manages that evolution. Okay. So for the rest of today, what we're going to look at is that evolution up through 3G compliance in the form of UMTS. Okay. And so UMTS again can be looked at as an evolutionary step from GSM to GPRS, and it's envisaged that it will coexist with GSM and GPRS. And so what it will do is it will provide essentially a new air interface, and but then use all of the same networking equipment or changes on or overlays or additions to, but not totally new core networks. Okay. The primary differentiators for UMTS from GSM and GPRS are the data rates provided, and again, new modulation techniques are used, the new radio transmission technology is used to achieve better data rates, and then again, the spectrum of operation. So UMTS operates in a different portion of the radio spectrum than GSM and GPRS. UMTS offers classes of service corresponding to quality of service, so it allows for conversational streaming, interactive, and background, similar to the GPRS. Okay. So this note is moving from sort of fairly current to historical. At this point, but it's still worth being aware of. Again, we say that 3G operates on a separate, or UMTS operates on a separate spectrum, and that spectrum is a licensed spectrum, which means that entities require a license to use the spectrum. Okay. In order to allocate that spectrum, it was essentially sold to the highest bidder. And in Europe, the licenses were auctioned on a sealed bid basis, and typically what happened was operators paid quite a large price for those licenses. And that significantly hampered the rollout of 3G in Europe relative to other places in the world. As an example, Hong Kong used a profit-sharing approach, and you know, again, 3G rolled out much quicker. The money was available to develop the technology as opposed to just owning the license. Okay. And so, again, here we can see the allocations of spectrum and these vary from country to country, which again means that in order to sort of operate in multiple countries, typically you have to have, you know, a telephone will have to have duplicate sets of hardware to interact with each of the systems developed in each different country. Okay. As I said, UMTS has a number of different flavors, and in particular, it can use either time division duplexing or frequency division duplexing, so that refers to how you provide the uplink and downlink channels, which typically we would think of as coming in a pair. And so time division duplexing, we provide multiple time slots. Frequency division duplexing, we provide two different frequencies. And different portions of the frequency spectrum are allocated to the different methodologies and the different technologies to be used. And again, they would be allocated in pairs, you have an uplink and a downlink pair for each. Okay. Now, again, the primary, the big change for UMTS was in the air interface. And it's not only that it's operating on a different spectrum, but it's operating significantly differently than it did previously. Okay. And so typically, again, it's these error interfaces that are evaluated to determine whether the 3G standards prevail. Although, again, you still need some sort of core network to provide full telephony services. Okay. So, some of them are backward compatible with 2G systems, so think about Edge, for instance. Others are not compatible. They require new frequency spectrums. And again, the one we're going to concentrate on today is UMTS, but again, DEC is another US standard. WiMAX as well satisfies the 3G specifications. We'll have a greater look at WiMAX in the 4G lecture. I left it till then because what we'll see, again, these are CDMA-based. What we'll see with LTE and LTE Advanced is that they're moving to more of an OFDM-based transmission. And those, a lot of the technological innovations first appeared that are sort of underpinning the 4G services first appeared in WiMAX. So we'll look at WiMAX in the context of 4G, even though sort of WiMAX, as it stands, is not a 4G system. There's a WiMAX Advanced, which brings you to 4G. But again, a lot of the technological innovations for 4G first appeared in WiMAX. Okay, so again, each of these represents a different channel access method and transmission method, but that's in order, but the standards have to cover not only that, but sort of everything required for the transmission of data from, again, the mobile end user into a public telephone or data network. Okay. So UMTS specifies a number of modulation techniques. The most common is WCDMA, which uses direct sequence spread spectrum. Time division, so that's a frequency division oriented technique. Several techniques, the TD-CDMA and TDS-CDMA use time division duplexing and in conjunction with CDMA. Okay. When we sort of drill down into a few details, we'll look at WCDMA, which is again the most common flavor. Okay, so the US offerings, the CDMA 2000, edge counts, deck counts, mobile WiMAX counts. Okay, so concentrating now on UMTS, the UMTS specification deals with three main components. The core network, the error, the radio access network, and then the error interface, and so how the user equipment connects. Okay. So in terms of the core network, it has both circuit switched and packet switched elements, and it can be shared with GSM and GPRS. The main additional entity now is the media gateway server, the media gateway, and this is intended to handle all packet traffic, whether it's being transmitted over a circuit switch or legitimately over a packet switch, and to interface with the public networks in a sort of uniform fashion. Okay. And so modifications have been made to the MFC and the GPRS to interact with that and with the media gateway. Okay. So still generally, again, everything can be shared with GSM and GPRS. Okay, what can't be shared is the radio access. Again, we're dealing in a different spectrum with significantly different transmission techniques now. And so we now have a new radio network controller, which deals with resource and mobility management, controls the base station, manages the radio resources, participates in handovers, interfaces with the MSC and the SGSN. Node B is the new name for the base transmission stations, and they handle channel coding, data interleaving, rate matching, modulation, so everything to actually communicate with the mobile station. And error interfaces. So again, how exactly are all the radio resources managed, and how do you achieve connectivity from your mobile station back into your core network? And finally, the user equipment. has to support sort of all the radio transmission and communications with your node beams.
Okay.
So, again,
yes, and intelligent services are also catered for. So, again, this is a telephony thing.
Not clear that anybody else cares that much. Okay. So, again, here we have our core network, which now has the three entities, the SGSM, the MSC, and the media gateway. And then we have our network services as well. And naturally, these have to interact with the radio network controller, which in turn manages our node Bs. And, of course, we have our users attempting to interface with our node Bs. And so what you have to have between each of these entities is a specification, an interface specification, that defines how the entities are going to interoperate, how they're going to communicate with each other. Okay.
And so,
again, between any set of entities, you're going to have the specification, which is just, you know, again, a specification of protocols by which the entities can communicate. And what we see here is that there's three main interfaces. The UU, which defines how the mobile station interfaces with the RNC, or the RNF, or the node Bs, with the whole radio transmission system. You have the IUB, which defines how the RNC interfaces with the node Bs, and you have the IU, which defines how the core network interfaces with the RNCs.
Okay. And so, as with all interfaces, the goal is to allow interoperability. So if you've specified the services and the data formats, then different operators, different manufacturers should be able to produce according to these standards and be interoperable.
The three main interfaces, again, are the UU between the user equipment and the radio access network, the IUB between the node Bs and the RNC, and the IU between the radio access network and the core network. The only one we're really going to look at today is the UU.
Okay. Now, the error interface is divided into three different layers. You have a physical layer, a data link layer, and a radio link control layer. And so, as you would expect, physical layer is deals with the physical transmission of the data. It's a little more complicated than we would have seen before, in the sense it also deals with how you sort of aggregate various types of data together. We'll see that later. The MAC layer deals with sort of how data gets access to resources. The radio link control layer, again, deals with how you get a point-to-point
connection going. And the radio network layer is essentially, it's an interface between sort of the users who are trying, you know, the users trying to just send data and the radio aspects of the system. Okay. So if you have the control signals to send, then the radio network layer will translate them into something understandable by the radio system. Okay. So, again, we can see that maybe a little clearer here. We have sort of sitting on top what the user wants, which is mobility management, call control management, and session management. So again, just a very high level, how do you access the services that are needed? And the answer to that is you have to translate that into the appropriate control signals and send them along the appropriate control channels. Okay. And so the radio resource control layer will negotiate sort of all the service parameters and all the resource parameters required and filter things along the appropriate channels. And then the layer two, again, you'll be responsible for setting up a point-to-point connection. And then the MAC will translate sort of the channel, the logical channel information onto sort of a transport channels, and we'll see this later, and that goes down to physical channels. Okay. So essentially the MAC is repackaging the information into a form that can be then transmitted. Okay. So, again, what we have up here are control signals that we want to send. And essentially what we're doing here is trying to move a control signal onto the appropriate physical channel. Okay. And as you recall from GSM, we had logical channels which were then mapped onto physical channels, and so that gave the system all the information they needed to know about what exactly was the information being sent. Now, it gets more complicated in UMTS. We now have a three-phase procedure, or two-phase mapping, really. We go from logical channels to what are called transport channels, and finally from transport channels to physical channels. And so, as before, the logical channels are indicating the type of information being sent. Is the information data? Is it a control signal? If it is a control signal, what sort of control signal is it? Okay. Now, the difference between UMTS and GSM is that a number of these logical channels can be multiplexed onto a single physical channel. Okay. And so this has to do with efficient use of the time slots. Okay. And so we have an intermediate set of transport channels. Where the Mac can, again, combine a number of logical channels onto a single transport channel, or vice versa in some cases. And then the transport channels are then mapped onto physical channels. Okay. And the best thing to say about this is that it is fairly complicated. We'll look at one picture. Okay. And again, we can see here, again, the radio link control layer wants to send certain signals, so what it wants is essentially access to a number of logical channels. But of course, at some point that has to be translated into physical channels. But what we get is that a number of logical channels can be mapped into the same transport channel. Okay. And so none of the examples are too easy. One of the simplest ones is if we look at the data control channel and data transport channel. Okay, so that's concerned with transmitting data, one's for control signaling and one's for transport. They both map onto the data control channel in the transport channel. That then is mapped into a number of physical channels. Okay. So, again, it's complicated. Just try to appreciate why that we have this sort of additional layer in here. It does have to do with sort of efficient use of the medium and sort of packing as much information as possible onto a physical channel. Okay. Yeah, and so again, this slide tries to show that. Again, you can see that there's different amounts of information required on the logical channels, and so what the transport channel wants to do is sort of make efficient use of the time slot, so pack as much information into a time slot as possible. So multiple logical channels will be multiplexed onto the same, combined in the same transport channel, and then that will be mapped onto a physical channel. Okay, so again, the channel structure is complex. We have this additional sort of intermediate step of the transport channel, which again is trying to pack as much information into any time slot as possible. And so, again, what we'll do now is just have a look at the functionality of these three layers. And then you've looked at this bit before in GSM. Okay. So, again, the physical layer has to transmit the bits. And again, it has to be, accept the mapping from the transport channels. And additionally, it's going to be used to provide whatever sort of physical information is available that's required by the higher layers. Handover information, so you need to know, again, when to do the handover and sort of quality of the signal, etc. Power control, error control, frequency and time synchronization, and again, anything that sort of is sort of related to strictly the transmission, physical transmission of bits. Okay. So the MAC layer, again, is concerned with implementation of the sharing of resources. So it selects an appropriate bit rate for the delivery of the data. It multiplexes the logical channels onto transport channels, so it decides what data is going to be sent when. It handles priorities between data flows. So it determines the scheduling of data in some dynamic fashion. And again, determines the allocation of resources. Okay. The RLC layer is going to be responsible for establishing a point-to-point connection and so what we want is to have that connection and not to add additional overhead, unnecessary overhead. Okay. And again, it provides either insured or an unassured data transfer, so you can either request that your packet has to get through or just sort of a best effort service. Okay. So what's it responsible for? It packages the data. It performs error correction, sequence integrity, detection duplicate packets, flow control ciphering, the same things you would get, say, in a logical link control. Okay. And so the RRC is sort of the interface to the core network. And so it's going to provide control services, which is typically a broadcast service, notification services to page and notify, connect with specific user equipment, and control services related to managing specific user links. Okay. So the functionality is that it can broadcast information to all users. It's the sort of brains behind the system in terms of handling radio resources, with those code allocation, handover, admission control, measurement and reporting control. It manages QoS. And it manages feedback from the users, power control, encryption, and integrity protection. Okay. So ultimately, this will make all the decisions about resource allocation, and again, those then have to be implemented at the layers further down. Okay. So again, that's a very high level idea of how the UMTS architecture works. And again, what we see is that we're trying to provide a reasonably comprehensive service to the core network in terms of we're managing not just sort of basic connectivity, but quality of service, etc. Okay, so our final topic today is WCDMA, and again, WCDMA is one specific air interface defined within the UMTS protocol spectrum, and we'll just run through quick examples of how it works. Again, this is not something I expect you to know the details of. Again, it's sort of interesting to, as an example, but don't worry about it overly much. Okay, so what are the primary features? You have 5 megahertz wide radio channels. Data rates go from 2 meg to down to 384 kilobits per second. Again, the technology used is CDMA, and the chip rate is 3.84 megachips per second. So that's the signaling rate. Okay. And what we'll see is that we can trade off between data rates and coding rates to get sort of varying, again, levels of accuracy and data rates. There are 2 modes of operation, frequency division duplexing and time division duplexing. Currently, it operates using frequency division duplexing. And again, what that means is that we have 1 frequency for an uplink and a 2nd frequency for a downlink, and they always come in pairs. Okay. So, direct sequence spread spectrum is used. And so this improves spectral efficiency. So it improves the EB over N0 ratio. It is a CDMA system, so unlike what we talked about in theory, well, we mentioned it there, but each cell uses the same frequency allocation, and you can use techniques like cell breathing then to improve the overall channel efficiency of your system, and you can have improved handover, so you can because of the CDMA, you can communicate with 2 base stations at the same time, and again, therefore, operate a handover where there's no loss of data. Okay. And there's enhanced security in the sense of spread spectrum makes it more difficult to decode signals. Okay. So again, what we said was there's a chipping rate or an overall single symbol rate of 3.84 megachips per second. And this can be combined with QPSK, which gives 2 bits per symbol. And that gives you an overall maximum data rate of 7.68 megabits per second. But that raw data rate that is, again, traded off between decoding and the spreading factor and the actual data transmission. Now, typically two stages of coding are used. The first stage of coding is orthogonal variable spreading factor, and for this, all of the codes are orthogonal in the sense that all the codes used are completely orthogonal to each other, and this can be used to distinguish between transmissions from a single entity, so it can be used to distinguish between all the transmissions of the base station, essentially. Okay. Now, when you get down to the mobile users, this technique can't be used, so a second set of codes is used to distinguish between the connection of an individual base station and end user. Okay. So, synchronization is required for CDMA systems. Again, when you're using these spread spectrum codes, you know, they're only sort of distinguishable if everybody's transmitting at the same time. And so there's primary and secondary synchronization channels are used. The primary code synchronizes the cells and will allow a user to distinguish where the beginnings of the time slots are, and then the secondary synchronization codes allow the user to distinguish within a block, so the numbering of the time slots within a block. Okay. So, again, CDMA systems, power control is crucial, and open and closed loop power control are both used. Okay. And let me just see what we have left here. Okay. Now, I'm going to not go into the details of the various operations. Again, just be aware that sort of we have the usual set of mobile operations. So we have to, the user has to connect to a cell via cell search. Okay, and involved in this is trying to find the correct encodings. Okay, and handover has to be catered for, and so again you have intercell handover, and that can be soft, so you can connect to two cells at the same time. And you, the decision is based on your EV over N0. Additionally, WCDMA specifies a sort of intermode handover. So if you want to hand over between one EMTS system and another, or inter-system handover to allow you to hand over to non-UMTS systems. Again, the thought being that UMTS might not be uniformly available, but you should at least be able to access your basic GSM. Okay, so I'll let you just, if you're interested, look through the radio connection yourself. Again, what you can see here is, again, there's some signaling involved. Okay, and just to note here, there's two possible, again, operations now. What's given as an example here is a voice connection. And what we see is we're going through radio resource control, mobility management, then connection management. And additionally, we have packet data transmissions. Okay. And again, the modes of transmission are various, and they're designed to optimize, the efficiency of the radio network, so to use as few resources as required, but also to provide for quality of service. So, short, infrequent packets can be transmitted on some of the control channels. You don't have to set up a dedicated data channel. But if you're doing something like streaming data, it might be worth your while to set up a dedicated data channel. Okay. And so then the benefits of that are that you can have sort of dedicated channel control and also have the resources available to you. It's essentially setting up a connection, so there's some connection setup overhead. And finally, you can have a shared channel, so you can set up the channel, but if you don't need all of it, the multiple transmissions can be multiplexed onto the same channel. Okay, so again, there are whole books written on UMTS, and I've sort of given you a very basic overview in 1 hour. So the main thing to walk away with is to try and think again of UMTS in this evolutionary term. That we started with GSM, and we sort of moved at various sort of technical improvements to try and improve, handle packets to improve data rates. And in terms of the 3G world, that's culminated in UMTS, which is quite a complex telephony-oriented system. What we'll look at next Thursday is how the UMTS and the 3G has now or is migrating towards 4G standards, which have a lot of technical changes to improve the data rates, and optimistically they're looking at 100 megabits per second moving at high speeds, a gigabit when not moving, and also adding all these nice-to-haves like global roaming, so being able to interoperate within networks all around the world, and high quality of service for multimedia applications, and moving towards IP being the core framework as opposed to, again, the connection-oriented setup that's prevailed till now.
Okay, so that's all we're going to say for today. Next week, again, we'll do an overview of 4G, and again, I'll discuss WiMAX in conjunction with 4G. It's WiMAX proper is really a 3G standard, but as I say, all the sort of technological innovations sort of first appeared there and has been improved upon to arrive at these 4G requirements. So, again, Martin Kennedy is in the master's lab if you have a need to talk to him about your project, and he'll be there for the next hour and a half. So I'll see you guys next week.